Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Relationship Pod. For those of you who don't know me, I'm your host, Sarah Boutros, and I'm a relationship coach who helps women build more confidence and security in their relationships. Today, we're going to be talking about a topic that I haven't really seen anyone else talk about, but believe it is incredibly important to address when it comes to relationships, and it is the impact of burnout on connection. I've seen firsthand in my own relationships in the past just how much of an impact burnout can have on everything. Sex drive, energy levels, and the ability to be present with the people that you love. But I could never connect the dots at the time. I'm excited to be picking the brains of our very special guest today. I'm joined by Charlotte Stebbing-Mills, a leading well-being specialist and co-founder of The Wellness Theory, to break down the hidden effects of stress on our emotional connections and our overall well-being. Welcome, Charlotte.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to dive into this conversation, particularly from the relationship angle, because I think you're on point when you say it gets left off the conversation most of the time.
Yeah, and it's so important, isn't it?
It is.
I'm very, very excited to be having this conversation with you. Just to give a little bit of context about what Charlotte does and what she's achieved, she has spent nearly two decades helping high achievers, from individuals to organizations, relieve stress, avoid burnout, and create sustainable, thriving relationships. She's been featured in Arabian Business, CEO Middle East, and Gulf News, and she's on a mission to help people break free from cycles of exhaustion and disconnection. If you've ever felt overwhelmed, stuck in unhealthy patterns, or disconnected in your relationships, this episode is for you. So, Charlotte, we had a brief little discussion about this before we started the podcast, but when we think about burnout, it's often tied to our careers, right? But never do people really think about it in the context of relationships.
Yeah.
Can you share more about your experience with burnout and how it has impacted not just your work, but also your relationships?
It's such a great question to kick off with, isn't it? Because that personal angle just, I think, makes a world of difference. And like you alluded to in the intro, is I've been doing this for a long time, and I've been in health and well-being for forever. Basically, since I left school, it was like I haven't really done anything else since. So the fact that I was the health and well-being person, and then almost, I say out of nowhere, in hindsight, it definitely wasn't out of nowhere, after years and years and years of working to support others, I found that it crept up on me, burnout. And I think it's important to understand is that it doesn't just happen overnight. You don't just wake up and suddenly you're burned out, much to the what you would see obviously on social media is like everybody's almost self-diagnosing. There's lots of stages that we go through. And had I been more self-aware, I probably would have picked up on it sooner. But I got to the point where I was down and out, complete, like stage 12 of burnout, just depleted emotionally, mentally, physically, spiritually, everything, to the point of wanting to take my own life. I was done. And as you can imagine, that overspilled quite drastically into my relationship, but also interestingly at work, nobody knew. One, because I didn't tell them. Two, because a symptom of my burnout wasn't obvious, because it was more of an overwork, but showing up, performing at the highest level I possibly could. I was in a national role, traveling across different countries in the GCC. I had a lot of responsibility, leading over 1,000 people within the organization I was in at the time. And like, people were shocked when they then found out later, but they weren't as shocked as me. and I think that's a really important piece, because a lot of people are stressed and they don't know that they're stressed because it can be so subtle. And for me to get to the point of wanting to, you know, completely end it all, it was just like, how did I get here? That was the question. There was a lot of shame attached to it, given what I did for a living. And it was just like, there's something missing here, and I didn't know what it was. Unfortunately, obviously, I've been on a path since then, shifting gears into what was missing. What was the missing link? Because back when I first started in health and well-being, there wasn't talk about mental health. There wasn't talk about emotional well-being. It was about the food that you eat and the exercise that you do. And that was pretty much it. People didn't even recognize like social connection as having health benefits as well. So it's fascinating to me like how we've ended up here now. And I'm so grateful that now it's spoken about so widely. And people like you have got this podcast, so you can spread the word even more. Yeah, that's where I've touched it personally. And then as you know, like relationship-wise, it's been interesting.
So there's a couple of things that you mentioned that I wanted to maybe get you to elaborate on. Are there different stages of burnout?
Yes.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
What are the stages of burnout?
Yeah. Okay, so there's 12 stages.
Yeah.
Okay, but for our listeners, let's keep it simple in a way that you can kind of take it home with you. If we break it down into like break that 12 stages into three. We have essentially high stress, which is like the first four stages, where we are having highly stressful jobs or maybe high stress situations in life, but we're able to come back to ourselves. We're able to self-regulate somehow. But what we often find is that we start to feel like it's forced, right? So like we force to turn our laptop off when we're on holiday, things like that, right? We then move into the next kind of four stages, which is where we start to look at chronic stress. And chronic stress is when we start to have more forceful symptoms. So they become less subtle. This is where we might be overthinking, we might be anxious, we might be trying to prove ourselves on a whole nother level. This is when we actually start neglecting needs completely. And then we have the final kind of stage, if we group them in four, which is then when we start to move into burnout, right? Which is where we get to complete depletion. And sometimes those things can be almost interchangeable, but over the long time, you know, months we're looking at here is really a minimum. You don't get burnt out in a week. You don't go from like being able to self-regulate and then the next week you're down and out. You know, there's usually some steps in between. But in a nutshell, those are the key stages that we need to be looking out for.
Okay. Yeah. It's interesting to see it put in that sort of order and to see how it progresses from one to the other, isn't it? How did you find that your relationship was being impacted in every stage of the burnout process?
Yeah. So it's so interesting because at the time I had no idea, right? So this is looking back in hindsight. So initially it was high stress situations, right? So we have good stress. That's important to mention. So before we go into high stress, typically we have like eustress, which is that stress that's just that sweet spot enough for us to grow. And I was playing in that space for quite a while. It was when I first recognized personal development and really started to kind of lean into that side of things. But that tangled with the kind of that high stress is then it's like this constant need to keep showing up, keep proving yourself, keep doing more. And in the personal development space, if you're not careful, what you're listening to is exactly that. You've got to do better. You've got to go harder every day. Sure. And it's praised and it's rewarded. And it's so detrimental because it's not taking the individual into consideration. So that was really it for me. It was just my foot was on the accelerator and I was just going. And from a relationship perspective, that meant not prioritizing relationships as well as I could because I saw more value. My values were probably not prioritized in the way that they for sure are today and by no means perfect. But sometimes we can get narrow focused when we're in that state. And I was just thinking about work pretty much. So relationships got sidelined completely. I didn't really entertain them. I took for granted that they were there.
And in terms of the relationship that you had with your partner, John, who you've been with for 10 years now, right?
Yep.
So he's seen you in all of the stages.
He has.
Is that right?
He deserves a medal for staying that long. Yeah.
Yeah. So what did you see specifically happening within those dynamics and how did you start to navigate that? Yeah.
Well, this was early days in our relationship as well, which I think is quite interesting. It's kind of wild when he came into the mix. So there, we got on really, really well and we were able to navigate a lot of different challenges because we was also kind of working together in different form as well, as we still do today with our own business. But we probably took that joy, took it for granted. And then we both kind of went on our own little burnout journeys, but they just look very different.
Yeah.
So mine was more mental health. His was more kind of chronic stress and experienced a lot of physical pain inside the body. His coping mechanism was to keep training. So he'd be like eating your meat and that's pretty much it and training all the time. And I was then withdrawing. So with those two things combined, he's focused on that. I was focused on just running away, basically, because that was what my nervous system was telling me, which I now know. We kind of separated initially completely, like unconsciously. And then it just got to a point. It was like, is this really even working? And we both said, actually, we need some time to go and work on ourselves and figure this stuff out. We were still there for each other, but just not in a relationship context because we didn't want to start going down the avenue of trauma bonding and things like that. I'm sure we got podcasts on that.
Yep.
So that was really the beginning part. And then what happened naturally is we then started to share our experiences because we started to open up to ourselves, get to know each other. We felt safe to do that because of the relationship that we created. And that helped us to be more considerate, more compassionate to each other and really understand what each other really needed. So I'm very grateful that it happened, even though it was a bit sticky, that kind of first 6 months-ish. Yeah, we found our way back to each other, essentially.
Wow, that's a really beautiful story. And I'm so glad that it ended up that way for you.
It's not end yet, right?
Yeah.
We're still alive. Anything can happen.
Yeah. And still going strong. And still that's the most strong. Important thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love that for you. And I'm sure that a lot of your clients' stories don't sound the same. Because correct. Based on what I've heard from you is that you both had a certain level of self-awareness.
Yep.
And even though you said you didn't know that you were burnt out at the time,
yep.
but what you did know was that there was something potentially damaging that was yep. entering your dynamic. And you both said, okay, we need to take some space to work on ourselves.
Yep.
A lot of people don't have the self-awareness to even do that. So they yep. may end up in a situation yep. where they are entering that trauma bond, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
So have you seen that happen in your clients' lives? And how have you usually navigated that with them?
Yeah, we had the self-awareness a bit later, but probably wasn't there early on. So for our clients, like typically they'll come to us because they know something's not right. Like there's something's yeah. feeling off, right? And they're not quite sure what it is often. Mm. And then typically people will come because there's a problem in a relationship or there's a problem at work or in this area of life isn't as what as fulfilling as what they would like it to yeah. be, for example. And then they're almost looking for that fix that at that life level, right? It's mm-hmm. like, okay, what do I say to my partner? It's like, well, actually, it's not what you say to your partner. First of all, we need to look a bit further down. We need to look at what's going on inside, like what's going on at the, what we call like the root. Mm-hmm. So that's really where we start to look. It's like, okay, well, what's going on with you? What does all of this like represent for you? Why do you think this could be occurring?
Mm-hmm.
And 9 times out of 10, like the experience that they're having is they're not communicating because they don't know how or what to communicate. It's usually what rather than how. They're not necessarily knowing what boundaries they need to put into place. Maybe they're aware that they're not great at putting in boundaries, but they don't know how and why they need to put them in there. And often they are putting a lot of their needs onto somebody else to be met. So they're usually like the 3 themes that are happening. And, you know, it's the age old thing, right? You look inside and then, you know, you get clarity.
Mm.
It's a Carl Jung quote, isn't it? But it's, he obviously said it better than I did. But, but that's exactly it. When we go in, we can then step out and just be more in relationships and just be our true selves and be comfortable in that.
Yeah. 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 So true. And you mentioned a key thing here, which is outsourcing your needs to other people
yep.
and a lack of boundaries.
Yep.
So burnout in a nutshell is a lack of boundaries, full stop, isn't it? It's
yep.
not knowing where to draw the line
yep.
on what you're doing and how much you're pouring into yourself.
Yep.
So what kind of process do you usually walk people through in order to help them reconnect with meeting their own needs and learning how to set boundaries?
Yeah. So just to your point there as well, I think, yes, we need boundaries for many reasons, but often we need them because we abandon ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think it's sometimes easy to put that on others. It's like, well, I need this boundary because I need time for myself. But then when you have that time for yourself, we don't do the things that we perhaps need to do.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a few different things kind of within our coaching practice, depending on the person. But the key fundamentals are somebody learning what they need to be able to regulate themselves. Right. So when we end up in these high stress, burned out states, something's happening in our nervous system. Mm-hmm. Right. And we're not able to bring it back to its center. And it's okay to jump out of like that calm state and be in these stressful situations or in excitement, right? Or have times where you want to just recover and switch off. That's completely natural. It's when we stay there and get stuck in them where we have a problem. So the first thing somebody needs to do is be able to regulate. And there's a few different types of regulation. We've got self-regulation, which is where we can bring ourselves on track. That's when we know we need to go to a yoga class or do some meditation or put some music on or go for a walk, right? We have that within ourselves and we do that. Then we have auto-regulation, which is what your body is doing automatically for you. It's a wonderful gift that we have that tells you you need to go to sleep when you're tired, right? Or it starts sweating when you're nervous, right? It's trying to figure it out and calm you down, whatever it is it thinks you need. But then we have co-regulation. And this is where we bring somebody else into your state for a shared experience of being able to regulate and calm.
Yeah.
So that's one of the core things. And the other thing is to dive into their 6 core psychological needs. And so I'm not quite sure where you want to go with that. We can dive straight into that.
Dive into it. Yeah.
Okay. So the 6 psychological needs talks to our ability to regulate, whether you're self-regulating or whether you're co-regulating.
Mm.
So the 6 needs that we have, if your listeners aren't aware of the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we have like our survival needs, we have our physiological needs, and we go up the pyramid and we end up with self-actualization. And what we're seeing at the moment is most people are very fortunate to have their survival needs met. they are fortunate enough to be able to eat, to be able to have a roof over their head, to be able to drink water, these beautiful things. But then we're trying to jump up into this self-actualization, right? And be, you know, empowered and enlightened and you know,
the best version of yourself. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And there's often this step missing, which is where we dive into the psychology. So the six needs, okay, are certainty, variety, love and connection, significance, growth, and contribution. Mm. Okay. And they need to be met in varying amounts dependent on the person. So you might need more certainty, I might need more variety, for example. What typically happens in a relationship is we try and co-regulate by fulfilling each other's needs. It's like, I need certainty, so you're going to give it to me. Whether it's in a friendship or a romantic relationship, it doesn't matter, or even a work relationship. We try and pull on all of these different ways to fulfill our needs. But what can sometimes happen is we give all that power away to somebody else to fulfill those needs. And then when they leave, or if they leave, you're then left with your needs not being met at all, right? And you're like scratching your head thinking it was that person, right? And then we're scarred by this emotional experience that we've just had. Mm-hmm. So we need to learn how to fulfill those needs first for ourselves. And that doesn't mean you don't need another person, right? We need to have connection. Love and connection is one of the needs. But we need to start to understand, how do we fulfill them? And where could there be some discrepancies within a relationship? Mm-hmm. And where were we maybe putting that onus on somebody else?
Yeah.
So certainty, for example, is about more predictability. It's about more, obviously, certainty, but security. It's about having that stability, right? And whatever that looks like for you, it'll be different for everybody. But this is the point, you have to reflect and ask yourself, what does that mean? Right, what is certainty for me? Same with variety, significance, contribution, love and connection, and growth as well. And once you've reflected on what you need, that's when you can perhaps bring a partner or bring a friend into the mix and be like, okay, well, what do you need? Let's understand this. And am I expecting something of you that you don't need, right? Or that you don't know how to work with me on? Mm. Yeah, exactly. And when we start to do that immediately, without even doing anything else, you have an awareness, you have an understanding, you have compassion that you can now bring into the mix.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when we work with couples, it's really interesting. So typically we'll work with an individual first, and then throughout coaching at times, not all the time, but they'll say, can I bring my partner in to understand this as well? And sometimes that's appropriate. So we do. And then what happens is we lay them out next to each other, and it's like, okay, what needs to happen now? Like, and what impact has this been having on your life? The fact that we didn't even know these needs existed, let alone know that every behavior we're trying to make is achieving it. Right, down to the smallest things, like scrolling on social media, fulfilling people's need for certainty and variety, right? Or even connection or significance, right? And you're checking your likes and all this stuff, right? So it becomes addictive because now we're fulfilling the needs. So when we can start to look at, okay, how many of my needs is my partner fulfilling for me? Oh, and maybe I'm actually addicted to my partner, right?
Yeah.
And that's also something that you need to pay attention to, right? Mm. Because that then becomes an unhealthy attachment. Mm-hmm. Right. And if we've got unhealthy attachments, we then struggle to regulate ourselves when we're on our own.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Does that make sense so far?
Makes total sense. Mm. And there's a lot of similarities between our conversation around burnout and insecure attachment styles,
yes,
which is what I primarily work on my clients with.
Yeah.
It's actually insane how similar the behaviors are.
Yep.
And I think probably the burnout happens from a person who struggles with an insecure attachment in the first place.
Yep.
Because it's the same driving factor, which is like, I need to prove myself, I need to hustle for love, I need to do this, I need to do that.
Yeah.
The lack of boundaries, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really, it's cool to compare the two next to each other. But another thing that you were talking about made me think of some of Esther Perel's work. And she always says that these days we rely on one person to fulfill what we used to rely on an entire village to provide for us.
Yep.
And this is how people end up getting addicted to their partner.
Yep.
Because somewhere along the way, we have learned that we're supposed to find this one person who's our best friend and our confidant and is exciting, but also is safe and et cetera. Yep. And it's a lot of pressure to put on someone.
Yep.
But it also, like you said, takes your power away, doesn't it? So I think the art is in learning how to create interdependence, right?
Exactly.
Because now I think that we've also gone in the opposite direction. And a lot of the content that I share is more in empowering people how to learn how to regulate themselves and how to take the power back and put it back into themselves.
Yep.
because the sort of clients that I work with are so far in the opposite direction that that is where they need to pull themselves into. But at the same time, it's like you said, it's not about neglecting the fact that we still need people. And in fact, we heal in relationships because a lot of the times it's relationships where we broke in the first place. So we need them to repair. And that brings us on nicely to the whole co-regulation piece that you were talking about. For people who are, let's say, in romantic relationships or people who might not be, how would you suggest for them to go about doing co-regulation without getting completely lost and dependent on only relying on someone to help them?
And it's interesting because we're seeing like the rise of the independent woman, right? And now like men are now not needed, and it's like, actually, hang on. Or, or, you know, even if you take away gender, you look at the different energies with masculinity and femininity. And we're going into these extremes, right? And I often liken this to like a pendulum, right? This whole experience we have, right? We have this extreme need to be with others, or we have extreme negatives that we have in our life. And then we have extreme positives where we are in this happy, wonderful relationship and everything's perfect on the outside, but underneath it's just really not. And we've got to come back to center somewhere. And this is true for burnout and stress, as well as in those kind of relationship dynamics. So where to start? It's always, always self-reflection, self-reflection and self-awareness. Because if we don't know how we regulate ourselves as individuals, we're never going to be able to help co-regulate really with somebody else in an effective, real, authentic way. And it doesn't have to be a partner that you co-regulate with. It can be anyone. It can be the person at the coffee shop that's serving you their drink. It could be a friend. It could be a teacher. It could be anyone.
A coach.
Right? A coach, a parent. It could be anybody. Because it's about an exchange. It's about a shared experience. And typically that comes with a sense of vulnerability, right? It's when we're saying, hey, this is amazing. I love this about you. Or we're saying, hey, this, I'm having a tough day, actually, you know? And that's where we start to co-regulate, because now our nervous systems are getting on the same page. And now we're starting to be like, oh, okay, it's safe for me to feel this feeling, right? And most of the time when people are burnt out in relationships, because they're not feeling their feelings fully, they might be feeling them, but again, at an extremity rather than from a place of observation. And we want to observe as much as we possibly can. For people who are not in relationships, the key is don't worry about it. You're in a relationship with you, with yourself. You're in a relationship with everyone and everything around you. Start to think about those shared experiences and what they could look like. And keep it simple. It could be smiling at somebody. It could be like eye contact with somebody. It could be anything that would just help to soothe your system. Because that's really what we're looking at trying to do, trying to help you soothe. And going back to what we mentioned about extremes is that if anybody's listening to this that is like, well, I'm independent, I don't know if a partner is really going to fulfill my needs now, I think I'm okay on my own. Actually, you also need co-regulation, not self-regulation. So again, we've got these extremes going on as well. Something we see often, which is a coping mechanism to this, when people don't reflect, is they internalize the experiences that they're having. So if they've got one person in a relationship, and again, any relationship, partner, intimate partner, friendship, whatever, we might be blaming them for something, right? They're not behaving this way, or they're not doing what I want them to do. They don't know how to fulfill my needs, even if you do know what your needs are, right? And actually, that's often coming from a place of being in the feeling or being in the emotion or being in the perception of that in that situation. But if you're in a relationship where somebody is feeling burned out, right? Maybe, and then my partner won't mind me sharing this, when he was going through a period of burnout and he was getting towards that kind of higher end of those stages, he just wasn't himself. Like the energy wasn't there. You know, he wasn't that excited about going out and doing stuff. And I'm somebody that needs a lot of variety. He's somebody who needs a lot of certainty. So when he was burnt out, he needed a lot more certainty. And I still needed variety. And there was this period where I was like, because I like to journal. That's my form of self-reflection. I'm journaling. I'm like, there was frustration there, right? And I knew it wasn't him. It wasn't his fault. Like it was, I understand everything about what he's doing practically in life right now. And I get why he'd be feeling this way. But I could have easily almost attacked him for that. And actually what I noticed by just reflecting, it was, okay, I'm going to observe this feeling and see like if this continues to show up. And actually when I look back, it's in those moments, it was a moment, right? It wasn't the, it wasn't who he is. It wasn't our whole relationship. It didn't define that. But what we find is a lot of people are defining their whole relationship based on one experience or one feeling that doesn't get addressed. So just pausing and stepping back I think makes all the difference.
Yeah. And looking at the bigger picture, having compassion
yep.
for your partner, that's the biggest thing that gets lost.
Yep.
Especially when you feel like one of your needs is not being met.
Yep.
Then everything becomes about you and how do you get your needs
yeah,
met.
This yeah. is it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. What would you say is the difference between co-regulation and codependency?
Well, co-regulation, I think, is when you're using it consciously. You're aware that this person, you know, brings the vibe, right? Yeah, whatever yeah. that looks like for you, and then needing it, right? And it has to be there, almost yeah. a bit like a drug, right? Yeah. Or you can't do it when you're on your own, right? That's yeah. when the red flags yeah. start coming.
Such a great and simple way to put it.
Yeah.
It's the underlying driver, like, is it coming from a place of fear and urgency?
Yep.
Or is it coming from a place of just knowing where you're at and needing to reach out for that support as an added
exactly.
support to your to your problems? Yeah.
And cool. and that's the fascinating thing, is because when we are burned out and we're stressed out, like, we, no matter where you are on the spectrum, all of these feelings and thoughts and internalizations are all going to be amplified.
Yeah.
Right. So, and sometimes a common narrative, well, it must be something wrong with me. It's not my partner. Some partners get it in the neck, right? They get the blame. But other people, it's like, it's me. I'm the problem. I'm not good enough, right? I'm not being the person I need to be in the relationship.
Yeah.
And like, that can also take its toll. And actually, if we just dialed it back and regulated ourselves, got us to a place where we know when we're in this heightened state of maybe overstimulation, or we know that we're feeling withdrawn and a bit maybe out of sorts, that's a signal. That's a sign to just say, hey, what's going to bring us back into this centered space?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And from there, we can do something. Right?
I'm really glad that you touched on the fact that it can be a source of you feeling like you have to do more.
Mm-hmm.
This is something I definitely experienced in my last relationship. I was so burnt out.
Yeah.
But instead of actually seeing, I mean, part of me knew, like, okay, I need to take a step back and I need to do more yoga and I need to do, but even that became an added stress of me needing to, I felt like I need to do more and I need to do this. Even in the relationship, I was like, oh, you know, my energy's so low.
Yep.
I need to step up. I need to have more energy. I need to, you know, become a better partner so that we can reconnect again. And it was not helpful.
Yeah, this is it, because we're always looking for the fix.
Yeah.
Right? Most of the time when it comes to stress, burnout recovery, it's about doing less, right? So, but not like burning it all down and giving up on everything you've been working towards, but more a set point of saying, how can I do this but better? Right? What is it? What is that one thing that if I just did this or lent in that direction, what could change the game?
Yeah.
That's where like the superpower is, is being able to do that. But it's interesting you said about doing more, right? Because the early stages of burnout is about doing more. So if you feel like that's even more heightened than it usually is for you, because we have to remember that, yes, there's stages and it can be a very predictable journey. It's still very unique. And some people, maybe they're always like that, have been like that forever.
Yeah.
Maybe we start to see a behavior change, and that's what we should be looking for in our partners or in our friendships. We should be looking at, what's the behavior change? What has something shifted? Not just for them, but for you. Like, what is that? Because that's then the clue to perhaps what we actually need.
Yeah. Yeah. And how do you go about, like, there's one aspect, which is, how do you support yourself in burnout?
Yeah.
And the other is, how do you ask for support from your partner when you're burnt out without leaning into that codependency?
Oh, it's so interesting. Going back to my personal experience, it was easier to reach out to a complete stranger. I mean, that was still really hard. That
as in like a professional.
Hard, a professional. Yeah. I got to the point, the my rock bottom moment, which clearly went on for longer than a moment, but that moment I was literally like on my knees, bedroom floor, down and out, like, just for whatever reason was just like, okay, I'm not going to take my own life, but then what is this, right? And it was a very confusing emotional cocktail to be in, and the thought of telling somebody that I know, oh my gosh, no way.
Yeah.
Like, that was the scariest thing in the world to me. So I literally sent an email to a therapist and was like, oh, I think I need some help. I can't even remember now what I wrote. I was musting it out. But she was very kind and responded to me the next morning and was just like, come and see me. And I went and saw her, and obviously, like, kind of the rest is history, as it were. But it's more about addressing, like, your own feelings about your situation,
yeah,
whether it be because a partner's struggling or whether it be because you're struggling, like that has to be the first port of call. Because if there's already this overlay of shame, which there was for me, how can you be compassionate towards yourself if shame is running the show?
Yeah.
How can I have a compassionate relationship with somebody else if they're struggling too, if I'm living in this space?
Yeah.
It just doesn't add up. So remind me your question again.
How do you support yourself, and then how do you reach out to somebody else to support you without?
I think there's a state of readiness as well. Like that you have to be ready as an individual, but then somebody else also has to be ready to hear you.
Mm.
And that can be tricky because in some relationships, it's not always the case. You know, I've got some friends that I would have loved to have called upon, but actually I don't know they were ready to hear it at that time. Years later, they obviously now know like the ins and outs of everything. But at that time, they just wasn't in that space. Mm. And I feel like I don't want to put that on them.
Mm.
Right. So it's, and that's another common thing is they don't want to be a burden.
Yeah.
Right. It's
so totally common. Yeah, totally.
But it's understanding that actually it's natural to need to go regularly. Right. It's completely okay. It doesn't matter how busy somebody is. If they care about you, they love you, they're going to do whatever they can to support you.
Mm.
Even if they don't drop everything in that moment, they're going to be there. They're going to think of you. There's something that's going to shift there from an energy perspective. And we have to remember that in those darker moments, I think. But asking permission to share as well. We call it like sharing a withhold. So if you've got something, and I wanted to say to you, Sarah, like, is it okay for me to share something with you? You don't have to reply. All I want you to do is just hear me out, say thank you, and I'll leave you alone if that's what you want. But I just feel like I need to share something. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Like you,
I love that. Yeah, yeah.
You would say, go for it. Usually.
Like, please share.
I've never heard anybody say they got a no to that.
Yeah.
Like, all the people we've worked with. It, because you're allowing yourself to have the space as well to say, well, I'm not going to say any more than what I'm going to say as well. So you're almost like taking baby steps into it for you and the other person.
Yeah.
And what that creates is a safe space.
I love that.
And the reason we're regulating in the first place is because we're looking for safety, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably the main thing.
Yeah, it's so interesting. The way that I see that burnout and relationships are so intertwined as well is when you look at all of the studies on nervous system healing and coming back into a state of being safe in your own body, it's recognizing that survival, whatever sort of survival mode that you're in, always comes down to a lack of connection, whether that's with yourself or with other people.
Yep.
And I think a lot of people don't realize that.
100%.
They don't realize that.
They don't. Gottman Institute did a study which showed that 69% of relationship conflicts are because of unmet emotional needs, not practical stuff.
Yeah.
That's huge.
That
number is insane.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And most people are out of touch with their needs, which is why they end up going around in circles with these arguments that just don't seem to go anywhere.
Yeah.
Because they're not really addressing the issue that they need to be addressing.
Exactly. And I get it, right? Because we don't know.
Yeah.
Right? I had no idea. Right. And I was working in this space, like in those kind of early years. And it was just like, if I didn't know, and that's how I felt. And I know I don't know everything, right? That's obvious. But it's like, if I didn't know and I live and breathe this stuff, how does like Joe down the road that doesn't care about any of this, how do they know? Like, it's just worlds apart, which is one of the reasons we created the wellness theory. Because it was like, well, someone's got to say something. And for sure, there was lots of people doing amazing work. That was like the catalyst. It's like, okay, well, how do we get people to be aware of this? And unfortunately, I think we've got to a point, it's suffering, right? We have to suffer and then we'll ask the questions.
Yeah.
Right. And I disagree with that. I don't think that we do. I think we could listen to a podcast and be like, oh, I've got these six psychological needs. Amazing. Now I know, right? And then it's like, okay, what do I need? Like, how much variety do I need?
Yeah.
How much certainty do I need? How much significance do I need? Significance is an interesting one that I really want to point out, actually, because a lot of people feel guilty for needing significance, right?
Because why is that?
It's not everybody, of course. We have the other extreme where ego's running the show and we want all the significance in the world. And I think it's probably up to individuals to answer that one for themselves. But I think the key is recognizing that it's natural. We all need to be seen, heard and understood.
Yeah.
And it goes back to what we were saying earlier. It's like, well, maybe you're being a burden or you're seen as arrogant or you're being perceived in a certain way.
Mm.
If we go back then to internalizing things, a lot of people spend a lot of time thinking about what the other person thinks of them.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally.
So they don't want to be seen as this person that's either really needy or there's some big shot. Like, who do they think they are to be saying this? You know, it's like, actually, it's just a core need that's being fulfilled.
Mm.
Yeah, do it compassionately. Do it ethically. Do it ideally without the ego as much as possible, but it's a need and it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and people struggle with that in all sorts of relationships. Yeah.
So true.
We have to ask ourselves.
So true. It's really interesting to also understand the origins of that need. And it's also part of our survival as human beings, because we are social creatures and we are all hardwired to feel like we belong.
Yep.
That need for significance, but also for the safety of fitting in, is because somewhere way, way back in the past, if you didn't fit in and if you were sort of rejected by the group, you would die.
Yep.
Like you would literally, you would literally die. You'd be cast aside.
Yeah.
No group there to protect you. No one to hunt with.
Yeah.
You just waste away.
What's really interesting about is that because it's true. We need to fit in. It's tribal. It's part of who we are. But to fit in doesn't mean to be the same as everybody else.
Totally agree. Yeah.
Right. And this is where I think the need comes in really well, is because actually, it's like, okay, I need more certainty. You might need more variety, but that's great. You might get a certainty from me and I might get a variety from you. And therefore now we fit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Because we can, have that dance together, right? Or with your partner, whoever.
Mm.
And it's seeing that the differences is what make us connect in the first place.
Yeah. I love that. And I think that what's important as well is to recognize that we're not in the same position as we were when we were hunter tribal gatherers. And we do actually have a lot more freedom to show up with authenticity and align ourselves with people who match with us, with the differences and with the similarities as well.
Yep.
So to always try and figure out where you fit in the world,
that
is another cause of burnout for sure, because you're constantly just trying to figure out, like, okay, like, do I belong here? Do I belong there? Do I belong there? But actually, if you just drop the act and you just show up as who you are, you will naturally attract the people that you're supposed to attract yourself to.
100%. That takes courage.
Yeah.
And I think we're lacking courage in this day and age. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Maybe there's a bit of pessimistic, but
it's hard.
I think we could see more.
Yeah. Well, it's hard because we live in a society that is basically constantly telling us that something is wrong with us.
Yeah.
You need to be more of this. You need to be more of that.
Yep.
If you put that on top of all of the childhood conditioning that most people have already been through, which is that you need to act like this and you need to be like this in order for you to receive my love.
Yep.
It's just a cocktail for disconnection.
That's why we've got to do the deep work and take responsibility for it as well, I think. And it's not easy to do. And sometimes it takes something catastrophic to happen for us to do that. But you're right. It's not easy, but it's possible. And there are people that are in it and doing the work, and you get to choose who you surround yourself with. And that sounds so cliche, right? It's very like bumper sticker, but it's so true. Like, there are people who just want to shine a spotlight on all the wonderful things that you are.
Yeah.
And those people exist. Like, they really do. Maybe they're not there right now, but they're there. Like, how can you lean more towards that? And often we have to be it.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
Annoying a people pleasing kind of way in a genuine, authentic connection kind of way. And that starts with self.
Yeah. Everything starts with you. There's something that you brought up earlier, which is such a huge piece in not just the burnout, but in personal development, healing space in general, which is shame. Mm. Shame is such a killer. And it can be so subtle as well that you don't even recognize that you're operating from a place of shame.
Yep.
I'll give you a personal example of when I was in burnout. And I so related to the story that you were saying when you were like, sometimes it becomes worse because you're like, I need to do more. I need to be more. I need to do this.
Yep.
I was operating from such a place of shame, but I thought that I was wanting to do what was best for me because I'm like, well, I know that this thing will help me. Yep. So I have to do it. But actually, when I took a step back from all of it, I had to drop all of it because it was making me more burnt out.
Yep.
And when I dropped everything, I recognized like, oh my God, that was even from survival mode, what I was doing there. And I didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
So how do you suggest for people to be able to catch themselves in the sneaky shame spiral?
Oh, it's such a great question. It requires, again, self-reflection for not wanting to be a broken record. I think burnout, people often think burnout is because we're working too hard and we're doing too much.
Yeah.
I think that plays a fraction. It's a slice of it. I think what's really happening is under the surface, there's a lot of unresolved emotions coming up. There's a lot of lack of knowing who we are coming up. There's lack of alignment in then how we present ourselves and can show up in the world.
Mm.
And I think it's actually those things that are driving the car of life anyway.
Yeah.
And often most people's shame is rooted in the earlier years, right? Mm-hmm. So I think if we're experiencing some things that we're not happy about in our day to day, is try to link it back. When was the first time I experienced this or felt this? Because, I mean, I wasn't very emotionally literate. It was something that I was actually very dissociated after some trauma in childhood. It took me a long time to be able to connect with my feelings, let alone name what I was feeling. So I had no idea I was feeling shame. No idea. Mm-hmm. But that I had all of the behaviors now that I know were like linked to that. So it's about understanding, like, what are the behaviors trying to reveal to you?
Mm.
That's where your answers are going to be.
Yeah, so that's a powerful question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rather than be like, where's the shame? Like, let's shine a spotlight on it, because that's scary, right? It can be really scary. Shame is the lowest vibrational emotion that we have.
Mm.
It's the heaviest. But if we can step into a curiosity, it's not going to feel as heavy.
Mm.
So curiosity and compassion. I mean, the antidote to shame is compassion.
Compassion, for sure.
So if we can do that for ourselves, amazing. If not, co-regulate. Get around somebody that can help you. Get around somebody that you can, you know, show them a little bit of your shame and see how they respond. That's what I would do. I mean, that's what I did do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a funny one. Like, I mean, again, everybody's very different. But for me, it was like, okay, well, I'll show this person a little bit of me and see how they react. Oh, that was okay. I'll do it. They can now
like
see a bit more of me. Okay,
was that a conscious thought process?
Don't think it was.
No.
But I think it was more of a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
But I'm quite grateful for it, because it's really helped me to be able to connect with people. I think without that coping mechanism, I probably wouldn't have been able to do that. But it also breeds trust.
Mm.
I think trust is a really important thing. Yes, self-trust.
Oh my gosh,
but if we're going to co-regulate, there's a trust there. Right? If I'm going to give you a hug because you're crying about something, that's obviously not the only way to co-regulate. But that's one example that we can all relate to.
Mm.
Is like, there's a trust there, right? And
yeah.
and you build a bond. Okay, and from there, okay, now that person has seen all of those parts of you, like you mentioned earlier, John, you know, 10 years in and is still here for all of it. It's like he's seen the ugly parts, you know, and that's okay for me now. But would I have shown him that at the beginning? Probably not. Like, I didn't want to, at least, but because I was like down and out, I probably didn't have much choice. Mm. But I think we can show those uglier parts of ourselves to others in a much easier way when we do it piece by piece, step by step.
Yeah. And when you build trust. A lot of people are afraid of showing those parts of themselves, and understandably so. It's very raw and intimate, and you do need to have some sort of foundation of trust before you start.
Surprise! Let's go co-regulate.
But honestly, without revealing those parts of yourself, you'll never be able to connect on a deeper level with someone.
Yeah. With that, if it is really, really scary, write it down on a piece of paper and burn it, right? Like, some people don't want to journal because they're worried that somebody's going to find it as well, right?
I know,
so
some people like
write it down, burn it, right?
Yeah.
Just get it out. It's there to be expressed, right? It's there to be seen, because when we see or we feel the emotion, well, now it starts to take different form and now we can start to move up that emotional ladder away from shame. So start with what is available to you, right? And that might be writing it on a post-it note, right? It could be absolutely anything.
Yeah.
You don't have to share it with anybody ever if you don't want to, but share it with yourself.
Yeah. It always starts with you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And there's something that I saw on Instagram the other day. It's, we often expect from other people things that we don't even give to ourselves.
Yep.
And it's like, as you said, we all have a fundamental need to feel seen, heard, and valued.
Yeah.
But we always outsource that.
Yep.
We never once stop to think, okay, like, am I seeing myself?
Yep.
Am I valuing myself?
Well, it's easier not to, right?
Yeah,
it's easier to outsource.
Yeah, it's easier to outsource. But then in the same breath, people are like, oh, I can't be myself. And I'm worried about, you know, pushing people away if I show them who I am.
Yep.
And it's another block to connection.
Yep.
And it's not until you actually get comfortable with your own vulnerability that one, you remove the blocks to the burnout to start with, because you're actually letting things come up and you're processing them, but also that you open the door to connection with other people as well. So I like the suggestion that you gave about the journaling, like journal and burn it.
Yep.
What other sort of tips do you have for someone who may want to start processing the underlying stuff that's keeping them burnt out?
Well, the first thing I would say is, like, if you're really struggling, like, just seek help immediately.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, don't wait. But if that's not an option, aside from journaling, is even try like visualizing, like have a conversation with yourself, like open a dialogue in your own head. You don't even have to say it out loud. Like, what does that look like? What's coming up? But ask yourself that question. What do I need right now? Super simple. What do I need that maybe I'm not getting? Right. And then just see how you can answer that for yourself. And the answer will be there. Right. I don't think it needs to be more complicated than that.
No.
What do you need?
Yeah. I like it. And from what you said around before, when you were so disassociated, you didn't even know what you were feeling and what you were needing.
Yeah.
I really relate to that because it's very similar to my own story. But I also remember when I was at that point, I actually didn't know what I needed. That was a hard question. I think that's, if you ask yourself that question and you don't know the answer, that is your sign to hire somebody. To help you start peeling back the layers to find out what the fuck's going on in there.
Exactly. I think as well, like just before that, if you get an I don't know, ask yourself again as well first. Because our immediate go-to is I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so okay, well, if you did know, just entertain me for a minute. If you did know, what would you say? Right, and something will come up. But even if then you still get that I don't know, okay, fine.
Yeah.
Then obviously like reach out. And I think it's this journey of life, relationships, everything is supposed to be with others.
Yeah.
Right, whatever that looks like, you know, we're not supposed to do it on our own. So I think it's important, even if you do know the answers, still reach out, bounce it off of people, whether that be a friend, a therapist, a coach, whatever it is.
Yeah. I love that. Don't have to do it alone.
No. It's a cliche.
But it's so true.
Yeah.
It's so true. And the healing doesn't happen in isolation. Even if it starts with you.
Yeah.
Because everything starts with you.
Yeah.
It's not something that you should or you have to do alone.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
One thing that I've noticed as well, and it's almost like a sneaky way of self-help and looking in. And this is something that I think I did at the beginning of like, well, but I mean, more personal development. Clearly there was something going on within me that I got so like invested in personal development.
Yeah.
I've been into that for a long while before kind of burnout in that extremity struck. And there was a curiosity there. So I didn't know that I needed to ask for help, but I knew there was something that wasn't right. And it was that, okay, follow whatever you're being drawn to, follow that. And it will lead you where it is you need to be. I'm a true believer of that.
Yeah. That's powerful. Yeah. That's powerful in itself. Your body and your intuition is so smart.
It knows.
Yeah. Maybe. Even all the stuff that you go into personal development trying to fix, it's all trying to help you in some way.
Yeah, everything. Yeah. All of it is.
Yeah.
This is why I always come back to the six psychological needs, because every single one of our behaviors is fulfilling a need. So what need is it fulfilling for you that you listen to this podcast? Pause and actually ask yourself that question, like to people listening, like what need is it fulfilling? For me, being on the podcast is about contribution. It's about growth. It's about connection, right? It gives me a sense of certainty that our message is getting out there. It's variety because we don't get to chat every day. Do you know what I mean? So like there's always something, no matter what it is. Like, why did you pick up that book? Why did you say that? Why are you drawn to this person? Like, what need is it fulfilling? Like, just ask yourself, just observe yourself. Don't even ask, just observe. The answers are already there. They're already there right in front of you.
Yeah, wow. I love that. There's one thing that I wanted to circle back to that we were talking about earlier, and it was about the expressing your needs to your partner.
Yep.
I know that this is a big problem area for some people. So what advice would you have for someone who wants to learn how to communicate their needs without feeling guilt or shame?
That's a great question. I think the first thing is self-regulate first. I know we want to co-regulate with our partner, but sometimes we have to step into it from a place that's already regulated. If we're in shame or in fear or in guilt, might not be as regulated or as centered as what we could be. So that'd be the first port of call. So make sure before you enter any kind of dialogue is see if there's something that you can do to set yourself up for success. And it might be where you choose to have the conversation. You know, maybe it's better to have it in your living room, right, where it's quiet and there's not too much stimulation. Or maybe it's better for you to be out and about, going for a walk, maybe. Like, what helps you to feel as grounded as you can when you're going to have a potentially difficult conversation? Be the first thing. But the second thing is being self-compassionate, but being self-forgiving as well, and know that it's completely natural. Like, you're human, and it'll probably be a relief. You communicate, it'll be the biggest gift you can give to somebody else, because they will probably breathe a sigh of relief of, oh, now I know what's going on, right? Or, oh, I feel this too, right? I think sometimes we can get so stuck in our own minds as to what it is I've got to say that we forget about what actually it's going to do for the other person. So think about how does what you want to say serve the person that you're trying to explain it to? And I think you'll find a little bit of grace and a bit of compassion, not only for yourself, but the other person as well.
Mm. Yeah, love that. You're right. People don't often think about how it would benefit the other person or the relationship.
Yeah.
Reality is they're always looking at the worst case scenario, which is what brains love to do. Yeah. But
and also, like, if you're coming from that place that's centered and from a compassionate lens of you and the other person, we're less likely to flip into like blame language, right? And it might be that you don't intend the other person to feel a certain way, but it might come across that way if we turn up dysregulated. So perhaps we can choose our words more efficiently when we are more centered.
Absolutely. And one thing that I learned from the Gottman Institute, which I think would add such a nice layer to what you've just said, is when you're thinking about communicating, always come from a place of what you feel and what you need, rather than making sweeping statements about the other person.
Yeah.
Like, if it ever starts with "you always" or "you never,"
yeah,
you know that you're heading in the wrong direction. Exactly. But if you're like, you know, "I feel upset and I need more emotional support," that actually creates an open invitation for someone to step into your world and see, like, okay, like, I can meet this person where they are, as opposed to having to protect themselves and like, "What? I always?" No, you always.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And framing it, like we said earlier, with, is it okay to talk right now?
Yeah.
Or can we talk about this? Or is it okay for me to share X, Y, Z? Right. And like, get that, get them there, get them in the room, whatever that means.
Yeah. Asking for permission is so powerful. It's so underrated, I think.
And you're not asking permission because you've done something wrong and you need permission or you're going to do something wrong. It's more asking for the space, asking for the kindness, right? You're asking for something they want to give you.
Yeah. It's important because you also make sure that they're at a place where they're able to receive what you want to say. Because if that person's just had the worst day in the world and you want to open up a conversation, they can so easily get triggered and the whole conversation could just blow out of proportion for no reason.
Exactly. Yep. 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And often when things blow out of proportion, it's because there's something else that needs to be said. So another kind of tip that might be useful is, underneath everything you're trying to say, what are you really trying to say?
Yeah, I love that. I wish we could sit and talk for the rest of the day because I'm really enjoying this conversation. I would love to wrap up this podcast with asking you, what is one thing that you wish that people would understand or walk away with when it comes to navigating their burnout and relationships?
Yeah, I love that question because it makes you just think more expansively, doesn't it? I think taking into account and responsibility for how we project our stuff onto other people, I think, is so important. And we alluded to it earlier when we said about internalizing a situation. But what we do is we internalize a situation, we do whatever we do with it in our own mind, right? And then we just regurgitate it back out there, right, to the person or to whatever situation we're in. And I think sometimes we don't realize we're doing it. And again, that's where the self-awareness piece and being reflective comes in, and being able to ask yourself, what is it I really wanted to say, not this is how it came out, right? And I think sometimes, like, we get stuck in our old experiences and they play out in relationships over and over again, and that often happens is because we're literally taking our stuff and we're throwing it at the other person, and we're not saying, oh, hang on, let's take that from over there and actually turn inward with it and then see, what do I want to give out?
Yeah.
Right? There's a person in between and it's you. So I think that's
so true.
Key.
So true.
Yeah.
And that starts with self-reflection, self-awareness, which is kind of the core theme of all the advice that you've given today, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Without that, you said it beautifully earlier, you can't connect with somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Powerful stuff.
It is.
Thank you so much, Charlotte. It's been such a pleasure having you on the podcast, and I've really enjoyed this conversation. How can people find you?
We are at thewellnesstheory.com. Mm-hmm. And you can, you can find us on any social media with at Wellness Theory. We've done a podcast, you and I, on our Stress Relief in Your Pocket podcast. So if you've enjoyed this one, go and listen to Sarah on that one, because it was really a beautiful conversation from a different lens again on stress. So if your experience in stress in relationships is key, thank you for having me, because I love these conversations. I wish we had more of them.
Maybe we will. Maybe we will. The podcast's not going anywhere. So
this is what I need, Sarah.
Yeah.
What you need to do.
Amazing. And thank you all so much who are watching for tuning in. I would love to know, what the biggest thing that you're taking away from this is. Leave it in the comments below. If you know someone that you think could really, really benefit from Charlotte's wisdom, feel free to share the podcast. And we will see you in the next one.